It was a very, very popular place to be. You couldn't get a membership for love or money. You
just couldn't get in here. And they were strict then.
Two members, wasn't it? So you had to know two members and they nominated you, and then it went to the committee and they decided whether you was worthy or not.
So you couldn't just join like you probably do now. You had to be interviewed and everything. And then, you know, when I enrolled, sort of thing, whatever it's called, used to, the television room used to be a library. You used to have books all around the walls, used to be very dark. And I used to go in there, it was like, mind you, I was a bit nervous. It was so dark, it's just me and the president in there. And what do you work at? What do you want to come here for? What's your religion? And all them personal questions and everything.
Jimmy, he ruled the roost that if he didn't like you, he wouldn't get into the club. You don't know if he was happy with you or not, you know. So, but I just tried to be myself and told him what I was doing for a living. I honestly don't know. It was a hard man to sort of figure out, you know. He was, I didn't know if I was in or not, you know. But apparently he liked me, so I'm still here 50 years.
I came in on my husband's membership. And as a kid, like, obviously, our dads. My mum was never a member either.
Because you used to be able to bring guests in with you. You know, you're responsible for their behaviour sort of thing.
So the wives were classed as a guest.
As a lady, you weren't a member. Until, I can't record it, maybe 8 years ago. Mm. Or 10, I can't record. Probably 8. Mm. And then you got full membership.
It was like a secret society. It was very bizarre and nothing went on to encourage people to come here other than, you know, people that were actual members and in the know. There was outsiders weren't encouraged to come in. And you really did have to come in with somebody, you know, who was a member, because you could only join the club, I think it was January to February. It was a very short period of time, and then it was only 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock on a Friday night.
It was almost Soviet-esque the way they tried to, you know, you wanted to join and made it so difficult for people. They just didn't really want people that weren't like them, really, you know, a lot of them, they really didn't. I'm not saying the race thing, it was class snobbery, I don't know. I've rarely heard them talk about it, but yes, they didn't want anybody who knew joining, really. They really didn't. When I first started here, one black lady would come in for the bingo on a Friday night, and she still does now, 12 years on, she's been there. But apart from that, there was no other people of colour whatsoever. But yeah, it was quite right-wing, really, a bit UKIP-ish, I suppose. Well, I know the ex-vice president despised Cameron because he thought he was too liberal. He thought he was too left-wing, David Cameron, so make it out what you will.
But I don't remember it being very friendly. It felt quite chilly. I mean, I was a foreigner, you know.
When I came here, there was about 3,500 members. At that time, you could drink and drive. And that was another part of it. Then they couldn't park outside. All the parking facilities stopped with the councils. It did shrink drastically. Then after that, there was a kind of a gap with memberships, because a lot of their children left London to go outside London to bring their children up outside London. That was a better and safer place for them. We hadn't got the clientele as such coming in.
It got a bit boring coming up here because you'd sit in the big hall, like book a show or something that was on, and there was no atmosphere because there wasn't enough people. So people just stopped coming. And we were all sort of quite sad about that because we knew what it could be like from what we'd had when we were younger.
Most of the club were much older people in their 60s, 70s, and a lot had moved out of the area to Southend and Essex and places, and, you know, Cockfosters, up that sort of direction. And really, they only came to the club on a Saturday night. They didn't come any other time. The club was incredibly quiet, next to nobody in here, very cold. It was...
When I first started on a Wednesday, there were some Wednesdays, not one single person came in. I just sat there on my own, I'd read my book, muck around on my phone, maybe practice a bit of darts, and not one person would come in. And That happened on 3 or 4 occasions, but on dozens upon dozens of occasions, I would get no more than 5 people in the entire evening.
It was bad times and good times. There was some good steward and stewardesses and some not so good. The committee had to get rid of some of them. But then when they left, there was a stock take, and the stock taker thought there was 422 gallons of beer down there, but had filled them with water.
But as I say, there was so much things going on in this club that money disappeared, and and there was 2 people had to deal with the fruit machines, taking out the money and counting it and everything. But apparently sometimes it didn't tally up, But this went on all the time. When some work needed to be done here in the club, the same family got the work, and that was the president's son got all the work here, and some of the work wasn't great.
At the time, the people were on the take, and it wasn't until they left, some of them, they realised, what was happening.
They had raffles and stuff there. So, and they had also, what you call, open the box. You bought a ticket, and your number was on the ticket. And there was 13 keys, but only one of those keys opened the box with the money. And all the keys were in this bag. So you put your hand into the bag and picked out a key, and no, the key wouldn't open the box. So it all built up, and sometimes back then, £700,000. But for weeks and weeks, nobody would ever be able to pick this key. But for some reason, it always seemed to be the same group of people who picked the right key to open the box. Having luck like that, it's got to be good. It's got to be really good to have a luck like that. So, as I say, that was a bit disappointing, really, that there wasn't a closer watch kept on what was going on,
It was in the 90s, anyway. Probably about 95, 97, maybe. There were sometimes we'd have private functions upstairs. The money wasn't there to buy spirits in. So Seamus across the road at the time, he had the off licence. He used to give us the spirits, and we'd pay him the next day for them. And he was very good. On another occasion, we had no gas to bring the beer up. So my partner went to Edmonton in the car and got cylinders of gas for us. They had borrowed money from breweries as well, which had to be paid back. And they were finding it hard to find the money to do that as well. They had Whitbreads and Courages here. They paid off Courages and they owed 20,000 to Whitbreads. So I was here. They said they were going to close the club. And I was here working. The doorbell went, and there was 2 men outside with the badges on. They said they were going to put a chain on the door. So I pretended to cry, and I said, I'm only a cleaner. I only started here 3 days ago. I don't know who you are, what you are. I'm on my own in the building. I said, I can't let you in. I don't know you. They said, we'll be back at 6:30.
I was sitting in work in Hackney. I worked in the accounts there. And got a call from my partner, and the bailiffs were knocking at the door. 2 of the women from the club come and sat on the stairs to stop them. I had to jump in a cab and get down as quick as I could. And I phoned the CIU from the taxi and told them what was happening. They said, they can't do it. Tell them this, tell them that.
But then we got on to the solicitor, Mr. Lord. He was from Manchester, that was dealing with Whitbreads. And I brought the president in at the time to try and deal with it. So he went up and he was rough and ready on the phone with him and telling him, you can't do this and you can't do that. So I went home and I phoned the solicitor. I said, I apologise of the behaviour of the person you spoke to. I said, can you give us 3 weeks? We'll get the money together. He said, no, I can't give you 3 weeks. He said, I'll give you a week. I said, no, we need 3 weeks. And I promise you, you'll get your money. I had been left some money from in a will from an aunt in Florida. So I had 9,000 and Les had the thousands. So we paid the first 10,000 straight up front. I said, you'll have that in 3 days. We need a bit of time to get the rest of the money. He said, I hate dealing with a woman. I said, I promise you, you know, you'll definitely get your money. So the secretary come back and he put 5,000 in. And then another committee person put some money in. So then we paid that off, and then there was still a kind of nothing, if you know what I mean. So we had to kind of beg and borrow while we were trying to get back on our feet again, the committee and the club. It was hard work at the time, but we got there.
But we would have lost this club only for May and Fred Ritchie and his wife. May put thousands of pounds into the club, and so did the Ritchies, because the bank was closing in on us, and we nearly lost the club. And you got, May has to be thanked big time.
One time we thought we were going to sell it.
But I think they were trying to close the club down, or set, not close it down, sell it, or sell part of it off. There's a few committee people involved in that. I didn't know at the time, but some people was bringing people in, showing them the club. The tower people was one of them. They lost their premises. They wanted to take over, I think, the small hall, part of here, part of the snooker hall. I believe it was 2.5 million, which was nothing for the size of this club. Some of the people on the committee at the moment were involved to keep it open. And some of the people have gone off the committee. They left and they didn't get their own way. So, yeah. And they were trying to keep the memberships down. So, if the place was sold, or partly sold, the members would get a payout. And the members thought it was great. Some of them thought it was great.
Once you're a member, after 5 years membership, you actually have part ownership of the club. You know, it would have been quite a lot of money to them if the club had got sold, but it actually wasn't anything like what the club was worth.
Yeah, there were three people here who are still in the committee or around the committee. There was Andrew Dumbleton and Lawrence Fryer, who is now vice president, and Tom Jones is president now. And these three basically, from inside of the club, you know, prevented that swift move towards sale. And Andrew in particular tried to get as many people as possible to be aware of that joining night. People from the local schools, the parents who know each other and all this stuff, 60 of them or 70 even, you know, filled out an application form. And you know yourself, you have to have a proposer and a seconder. And the only people who signed for it was Lawrence Fryer and Andrew Dumbleton. They signed every single form.
There weren't that many new members altogether, but those that were the newer members, or younger as well mainly, had heard about the club going to be sold and forced the committee to have an extraordinary AGM, because to do something like sell a club, you have to have a majority of members, and it's quite a big majority to be able to sell it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of the year now. I started in 2010. I'm guessing this would have been about 2013, 14, I suppose. I hadn't been here long when we had to vote on whether to close or not. And that was, you know, well, that was, yeah, the run up to that was a little bit of a tense atmosphere. I mean, because great thing with the club rules, you needed 65% to vote for it.
On the special general meeting, there were, however, 75 votes for the sale. And 100 something against. And when the president, Fred Ritchies, read out the result, you could see him turning pale. He was shocked. So that was an indication for many that he wanted, I mean, of course, and someone wanted it, but it's, you know.
Lots of us didn't vote for it.
No.
You know, because we thought we'd lose the club altogether, and it was our club, you know. Ten grand doesn't last long, does it? Your club lasts forever.
Yeah.
There's not one person left. I'm sure there's not one person left who wanted a club to close who's still coming in. Those ones who voted for it to close, they've all gone now, really.